Hello, I'm Charlie, and this is episode 3 of Easy Being Green, Lessons in Sustainable Business for SMEs. Today's conversation is with Phil Keel, who is the UK Managing Director of Hello Earth, an e-commerce digital marketing agency with a conscience. Now, I have known and worked with the awesome humans at Hello Earth since before its inception, and now I'm so proud of the partnership that Earth Collective has with this forward-thinking agency, who trademarks the term USSP, which means Unique Sustainable Selling Point, to recognise just how important sustainability is to modern businesses. Hello Earth really walks its talk. It's a B Corp certified net zero business with a climate positive workforce that puts its impact strategy front and center on its website. Phil is an absolute guru, and he'll hate that I've just called him a guru, I'm sure. Sorry, Phil. But he is. He's a guru in paid social. And along with myself, Phil is one of a team of experts that's just about to embark on a brand new and exciting venture called the Green Growth Project. And there'll be more about that at the end of this episode. Phil and I cover a lot of ground in today's episode, including what on earth was all that business with iOS 14? How should we navigate Facebook audiences, especially now keywords like sustainability have been removed from interest targeting? We talk about the moral dilemma that we all face when we see the likes of Patagonia boycotting Facebook advertising and what that really actually means. We'll talk about dealing with imposter syndrome and how to run your own race. And also the question of the hour, should we all be using TikTok? And like with all of our guests, we end this podcast with the question I ask everybody, is there such thing as a sustainable business yet? I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome, Phil. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks, Charlie. Nice to be here.
Welcome to the Pod Lab from across the virtual airways. So I want to chat to you a bit first about Hello Earth. It's a B Corp certified e-commerce digital marketing agency. And from what I can read on the website, you've generated more than £52 million in revenue for your clients, which are both really equally impressive facts, really impressive achievements. So, okay, tell us about you. How do you fit into this? And what have you done at Hello Earth until now? And what are you doing now at Hello Earth?
Cool. Thanks. Great question, Charlie. Yeah, very sort of astounding facts to start off with. So I appreciate that. We started off as sort of like a paid traffic agency for brands. So ultimately what we're doing is we're putting ads in front of consumers and customers, and trying to drive awareness, traffic, and ultimately sort of purchase and conversion for brands. And that ultimately starts with platforms like Facebook. So a couple of years ago we were very focused on Facebook ads and managing that ad spend, the creative, the targeting for brands to sort of maximize the profit for these brands, but then also ultimately helping them reach their business goals, whether that's they want to sell the brand, they want to help a cause, they want to solve a problem in the world, and whatever that is for that particular brand. A lot of the time it starts with reaching new customers or new audiences, and in 2018 to 2022, the best place for that or the biggest opportunity for that has mostly been Facebook and Instagram ads.
That's so interesting. So you work with clients, big and small clients, all sorts of sizes?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Yeah. So we've worked with brands that have come on that have been, set up in the last month, which obviously, has both sort of challenges, but then also opportunities on both ends of the scale. And then we've worked on brands that have been, running for a couple of years or businesses that have been around for sort of like 20, 30 years, but in different setups, whether that's bricks and mortar. And every different brand is different. And whether that's the position that they're in on their journey, you know, whether that has, you know, positives and negatives or hurdles and opportunities, whichever way you want to put it. That's the same whether you were set up last week or 20 years ago. There isn't really an ideal position to be in, because a brand that's been going for 20 years, they've got a validated product. Chances are they've got cash flow and a certain weight behind them to mean that it's difficult for them to fail. But at the same time, it means they've probably reached saturation point. They maybe have sort of like self-fulfilled ideas about what that strategy should be, and maybe they aren't as sort of like open to testing new ideas. But then at the same time, they've been doing something for 20 years, and now they're at a point where they might need to try something new. So yeah, and then new brands, it can be the opposite of that. So cash flow, revenue, there isn't necessarily a weight behind them. The risks are a lot bigger, but then at the same time, they might not have 25, 30 staff on the books and 25, 30 salaries and overheads. So they can potentially be a lot more nimble and react a lot quicker to what challenges and opportunities they face.
Gotcha. And what about you? So how do you fit into the puzzle? What's your expertise?
Yeah, sure. So I graduated as a graphic designer like 15 years ago. Yeah, so that's where I sort of trained up, and then moved on to social media as that naturally came around, and then a big opportunity on social media back in sort of like 2007 was advertising, and it was very different to what it is now. My primary time is spent on managing ads, but then also managing the team and helping them ultimately service clients to the best of our ability. So whether that's improving strategies and media buying and auditing accounts, or looking at sort of like new platforms and new opportunities as well. And being that real sort of key figure between the brand and then the person on the ground, the media buyer who's managing the ads.
Interesting. Great. So, okay, let's talk about Facebook. Lots of people heard about this iOS 14 update last year that was going to have an impact on data sharing for paid media. For the layperson like myself, or anybody listening who doesn't quite understand what this all means and what on earth happened, can you tell us what happened and if it's had an impact, and if there's anything that brands can do to navigate changes like this?
Sure. So I'll try and explain as best of my ability. I'm sure there's a lot of things that I don't really understand. And, Apple doesn't share with a lot of other people. So a lot of sort of iOS 14 communication comes about. So a lot of iOS 14 conversations are around it being a Facebook problem, but it's not just about Facebook. It's basically around iOS 14 and Apple giving the user the choice to opt out of tracking,
right,
when an app or a website on your phone wants to track you. And the biggest impact is when it's a third party track. So when that is Facebook trying to track you on a website, there's three parties involved there. It's not what we call first party, which is when Facebook is tracking you on Facebook, which is a different topic. So yeah, lots of different levels. You've now got the option to opt out of tracking, which is obviously great for the customer. We should all have choices, and just like we have the choice to use Facebook and Instagram and any other app, we should also have a choice to what is personal and that is our data. Just like you would want to potentially opt out of your phone number being available on the internet, or your personal details, like you're on the voter's roll if you're in the UK. That's like the big picture. And then on Facebook, and other advertising platforms that will use a cookie, which is just a small piece of code, basically, to identify you and track what you do. What it basically means is these platforms can still track you, but to jump through Apple's hoop, they now need to mask who you are and disable Facebook and other platforms' ability to say, this is Charlie, this is the website she's been on, this is when she went on it, so the time, this is the product she bought, and this is how much she spent. So as you can see, there's lots of different things there that Facebook now has to muddle up and sort of blur the lines of to stop me, the advertiser, from saying that is Charlie, mm-hmm. and this is when she went on the website and this is how much she spent. So we've gone from having sort of like 95% accuracy around tracking to around 50% if that person has opted out. If you've opted in to track in, which, you know, a large portion of people have, then we can still see about 95% of that information. So
that's interesting. A large people have been opting in. You'd think it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure why. Yeah, I'm not sure why people, you know, you would choose to opt in. Maybe it's because, you know, it's just we've become so accustomed to these pop-ups, like these cookie pop-ups on websites, and you just want the cookie to go away, don't you? So you just click accept. You don't read the terms and conditions. You just click close so I can, you know, browse the website in peace.
That's so true. I do that. I don't even look at what it says anymore. Just like, yep, okay, it's fine.
But I think the goal, ultimately, I want to live my life, and I need to go on this website. And I suppose that's a first world problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's where we are. We're still getting a good picture. Some of it's a bit blurred, and it's caused some issues in media buying and performance for sure.
Wow. So you've been working in paid media for quite a long time, more than a decade, I think it says in your bio.
Around that, yeah, I think so. Yeah, it definitely feels like that. Yeah.
You don't look old enough. But. So you must have seen some changes in that time. Can you tell us a bit about what's changed in the time you've been working in this space?
Sure. So I think there's been a lot of changes for both the media buyer and the brand, and then also the end consumer and the person on that platform. Lots of new platforms have come around, you know, Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram, and they've all changed individually. And that's generated, you know, opportunities for both the advertiser and the end consumer. Platforms naturally have just got more complicated, both for the media buyer and the end consumer. New policies, and that's impacted both, you know, both sides of the people using these platforms. But ultimately, it's got more complicated. So whether that's, you know, you're not allowed to do certain things, and if that impacts for the benefit of the consumer, then that's good. You know, you can't. You know, we all heard about the scandal with Cambridge Analytica. So it's good that we're not allowed to do things like that anymore. Or brands that might, you know, take advantage of that, or governments even. So yeah, more complicated and more tools and more tracking, and that's made sort of brands into unicorn brands, and I'm sure it's made a lot of people very rich when if they took advantage of those at the right time. So yeah, a lot of new tools, a lot of new tracking, the pixel coming on about, lookalike audiences, different creative formats, Facebook buying Instagram, and then being able to advertise on that platform. Brands trying to catch up with Facebook and Facebook ads, whether that's TikTok and you know, just originally starting off as a platform that you can't advertise on, and now you've very easily could run an ad in a couple of hours. So yeah, a lot has changed, and there's been a lot of positives for both media buyers and consumers, but at the same time, it's it's been a complicated time with you know, policies and big brands and governments getting involved, for sure.
So it's almost like there's more kind of technology and software and ways to do more things, but then there's also more policies that make that doing those things more complicated.
100%, yeah, that's correct. And those policies are ultimately put in place for the right reason, and that's, you know, to protect, you know, lots of different things, whether that's data or you know, freedom of speech or certain topics. You know, big platforms and institutions, they can sometimes get these things wrong and move quite slow, and that in itself generates headaches for both the media buyer, but then also for the consumer when there's, you know, certain types of content on these platforms.
Gotcha. Cool. So Hello Earth works with, you've got some amazing brands on your client list. Really cool, innovative. I've spoken to a few of them as well. They are doing some pretty awesome things. And you've been helping them to grow and scale and do their thing. But I guess in all of that, there's definitely some challenges that you're facing and your brands are facing, clients are facing. And I wondered what are the most common ones that you've seen in recent years?
One of the most common issues that brands can face is being able to set targets and go for them, but ultimately still generate profit at the end of, you know, removing overheads and ad spend and other costs and having enough cash at the end to keep this brand going and you know, pay salaries and everything like that. And those issues come from platform updates, global events that might, you know, impact performance, changes in consumer behavior. If your product is, you know, the market is saturated and the goal that you have is no longer needed or something like that. So, you know, over a long period of time is winning consistently. You may find certain wins throughout the year. Maybe that's if you're a new year, new me product, you'll have this, you know, 6 weeks at the start of the year where you have this big win, and then that performance might change. Or if you're a very you know, holiday or gifting focused brand, you'll have a great Q4. But it's what do you do the rest of the year, and I think that my biggest tip would be understand the market, understand the trends through the year, and assign your KPIs and targets based on that. And I think you should still have big targets and big goals and big dreams, but you've got to base those on a certain amount of information and truth. We've worked with some brands that have had the goal to, you know, generate venture capital or be acquired, and a lot of the time, whether they're pre-funding or after funding, a lot of those targets can just be a straight increase in revenue throughout the year. And there aren't many products or brands or sectors that just grow consistently throughout the year, especially as you go into the next year. Q4 will be amazing, and Q1 won't grow at the same pace as Q4. We've definitely worked with some brands, I mean, to say that on the other foot, we've definitely worked with some brands that have had a great Q1, but that was never the plan. That Q1 was, you know, we had a new product drop, we managed to land on some, you know, killer creative, but it definitely wasn't the goal to, you know, scale out with Q4 and go into Q1. I think you've got to, you know, solidify your objectives based on common sense and some truth as well.
Yeah. Managing expectations, I guess, is a big part of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And we're not there for brands to come on and we're, you know, to just neg everyone out and sort of say, you know, actually, you know, you can't do this, instead we'll do this. And brands and agencies should have, you know, aim for the sky. But there's got to be a, you know, okay, so this is why we think we can get here, and this is how we think we're going to do it. And if you can put a few bullet points in both those lists, then you'll be in a pretty strong place. Yeah.
Brilliant. So nice segue there into the flip side. You know, what's been working for brands in maybe in recent years? What's been driving the most success?
Sure. So I think, you know, the last 3 years have been pretty wild for both from like an advertising point of view. There's been a lot of changes, but then also around the world, there's been, you know, I don't think we've had 2 years that have been the same for many different reasons. So being able to adjust your targets and, you know, what you're working towards quite quickly based on what's working and then also what isn't working and pivoting based on that, but then also being nimble enough to react based on consumers, platforms, and then also outside influences. So whether that's, you know, the product that you're marketing or the problem that you're trying to solve, or your messaging or your creative or your audience or the country that you're selling into, having all those as flexible or as many as possible, those are the brands that can really grow. I know I've just said previously that, you know, don't expect to do that, but those are the brands that can actually do that. And we definitely do work with brands that, you know, do see a month-on-month growth in revenue and profit, but those are the ones that have been nimble enough to change and reactive enough, for sure.
I guess, like they keep saying, we keep saying, don't we? We're just going up, getting tired of all the once-in-a-lifetime events that are happening in our lifetimes. And even when you're a brand is doing something completely different, you still have to keep an eye on what's happening in the world and be able to move with that. And I guess that the brands who have their finger on the pulse, for want of a better phrase, probably a better place to be able to do that, because you have to understand the people you're talking to and what they're going through as well.
For sure. And I don't think that means, I mean, as marketers, we generally do ruin most things. read the room is a very good thing to do. And that doesn't mean spin every event into a marketing message. So whether that's, you know, using the term unprecedented, you know, these are unprecedented times, so please buy our toothbrush. That's not what we're talking about. And a lot of the times the strongest brands sort of like step out of a conversation. And I think if you're brave enough to do that and not do that natural knee jerk, which is let's send an email about this topic to your audiences, because they're probably consuming that information elsewhere. And they might just want to come to your brand for that, you know, that relief from real life. So yeah,
sometimes the best strategy is to stop and listen rather than have something to say if you're not the person to say it.
100%, definitely. I agree with that.
So we talked about success and challenges, but particularly success. And I bet there are some people listening today who are thinking, that will never be me. I'm never going to get those kind of results. You know, how are we going to get growth at all? It just seems to be doing worse and worse month on month, or I'm never going to be able to create creative that people are going to engage with, or whatever it is that they're feeling themselves, or individual brands are feeling, or the founders. Bit of imposter syndrome, maybe, that no one, you know, even that imposter syndrome of who's going to want to buy my products? Have I got the right thing out there? Am I sending out the right message? So if someone's suffering with a bit of imposter syndrome right now, what would you say to them?
I would say you're not the only one, you know, suffering from imposter syndrome. I definitely do from an agency and a founder point of view. I think it's natural if you care about something that you look externally and think, and you know, you are your own worst critic. So all of those things support the reason why you're feeling like that. It's natural to look at case studies on agency websites or, you know, read interviews from brands that have been acquired or generated venture capital and think, you know, while they've they've reached this many people, they've really created a market, or they've solved a sustainability issue that I didn't even think of, and they were so ahead of the curve, and they've created a sector, and at the same time they've owned it at the same in the same breath. You're naturally just reading 5% of their story. So they started off at zero, just like you. They've naturally faced a lot of problems. They've changed their strategy throughout the way, and you don't read about any of those issues or stories. You just read about the positive, and with hindsight, it's easy to look back and think we did X because of Y strategy. But you don't, they might have had 15 other strategies and ideas that fail, but you don't talk about those. So that's how you deal with imposter syndrome and other brands, and you just ignore those. And I think it's good that you read them, and you try and pull out and bullet point, what are the things that I can benefit from? And there's probably plenty of things that don't benefit you, which is, how much money they generated. The founder's a millionaire now. Just ignore all that. My tip would be to focus on your own race. And if you're at zero right now, how do you get to one? And then when you get to one, how do you get to two? So whether that's one customer or one product or £1 in revenue, how do you double that to two? Or if you've got a $1 cost per click, how do you get that down to 80 cents cost per click? Or if you've got a 0.5% click-through rate, how do you increase that to 0.8%? So, you might be starting at zero thinking, I've only generated £500 in revenue. This brand has generated, 15 million in revenue. You can't put those two figures together and expect to go from one to the other. You really need to focus on your product, your brand, your consumer, the problems that they're facing as a consumer, and how you address those, and the problems in the world, and how you're going to address those, and move the needle ever so gradually every day. And over the 1 to 2 years, people will be reading the interview with you about your success. And so that's my tip.
That's excellent advice. It's like climbing a mountain, isn't it? You take the photo at the top, but you don't show all the steps you got to get there.
Yeah.
Hard to compare. So I'm gonna get a bit technical now, and ask you for some technical advice. I know that recently Facebook discontinued interest targeting using the interest of sustainability and other keywords related to sustainability, which is a big deal for eco brands, right? Who are using Facebook as a platform to drive awareness and sales and revenue. What can they do about that?
Good question. Yeah. So it seems like the rug is being pulled out from under you if you're using these targeting methods. But it's not, because so if I just roll back a couple, 12 months to a couple of years, for a long time interest targeting has really just been a suggestion to Facebook about who you reach. So 5 to 10 years ago, it was all around page likes. So we all went on Facebook and we liked Facebook pages. I like this page, I like that page. And then you can then target people based on which pages they liked. That is no longer, that hasn't been the case for a long time. People don't really like pages anymore. You just consume content and speak to friends and family. When you put a topic into the interest targeting box on Facebook, you're really just asking Facebook to go out and find people who show signs of interest that they are consuming content about these topics, and that will be both based on the pages that they're consuming content from, the posts that they're talking about, but then also the websites that they're going on. Because if you remember, lots of different websites around the world have the Facebook pixel on. Facebook gathers all that data and uses all those pixels to paint a picture about who you are as a consumer. So interest targeting, just a suggestion, for a long time, Facebook has just been using the Facebook pixel to go out and find people. So you're asking for sustainability interested consumers, but really Facebook is ignoring that and just going after people who are on similar websites to yours and buying similar products to yours. So that is still happening, and that is ultimately what Facebook's core product is, is sort of like persona mapping. So that's a sort of convoluted description of what interest targeting is and why you shouldn't worry about it too much. But what we can do now, if Facebook starts to remove even more of these interest targeting methods, is a couple of different techniques. So if you've got previous customers, they are sustainability interested consumers, you could use that data to generate lookalike audiences. So you've got one pocket of potentially new customers there. Mm-hmm. You could also do broad targeting, which is ultimately just not using any targeting methods on Facebook and allowing Facebook to go out and find people. And if your website is optimized enough to tell Facebook that you want this type of customer, then it will find them. And then third and most recommended strategy, and which will probably move the needle the most, is by focusing on the creative. So that's creative that talks to sustainable audiences, and copy that talks to sustainable audiences. Use the messaging to find the customer, and Facebook will go out and do that. And a lot of ad accounts that we manage nowadays use very broad targeting, very big lookalikes. That's the 10% lookalike. Completely broad targeting, so no targeting, and we just use the creative to find the customer, and it works very, very well.
Yeah, just using the words and the creative to which obviously if you see something flash up on your Facebook feed and you're like, and it speaks to you, you're going to engage with it. And I guess that's how then Facebook goes, okay, these are the people.
For sure. I think if you roll it back 50, 60 years, and you think about advertising from years gone by, it was billboards, magazines, TV adverts, newspaper adverts. There wasn't any targeting methods. Newspapers might have had audience profiles on who their readers are, but it was just a bit of a guess. And you would use the messaging and the creative in that advert to speak to whether that's car insurance or deodorant. If it was a women's product, it would talk about women. If it was a male product, it would talk about men. Like that's the targeting. So
gosh, so nothing's changed really. We're still in the Mad Men era, aren't we? I love it.
Less alcohol during the day.
That's interesting, actually, going from the Mad Men era of advertising, where we look back on some of those ads back then and we think, a little bit misogynistic, or it's not something that we'd have put out today. But social media, for me especially, and I'm assuming it can be for other people, can be a bit of a tricky moral conundrum for consciously minded humans, shall we say. It's like I have a love-hate relationship with Facebook, in that it has a lot of benefits for getting Earth Collective out there. Earth Collective is a very different brand from an e-commerce brand, being a content machine. But then I see the likes of Patagonia boycotting Facebook, and I guess more recently, we've seen musicians boycott Spotify for not having what they perceive to be the right terms to prevent the spreading of misinformation. And so I was thinking about how smaller brands navigate this moral dilemma, because I was thinking, well, how do I need to boycott Facebook? Like, being a sustainable publisher, is being on Facebook going against our values? I'll tell you where I got to on this, and then maybe I'll get your thoughts, because I know it's quite a big question. But for me, I feel like, and for the smaller brands who don't have huge advertising budgets, who don't have huge budgets in general, who are just trying to get cut through as the best way that they can, almost the responsibility lands on the bigger brands who have those big budgets and already have huge awareness. Like Patagonia has massive awareness. Everybody knows the brand. Everybody knows the name. So the responsibility almost falls. Maybe I'm letting myself off with this with this point of view, but the responsibility almost falls on those bigger brands to take on the behemoths like Facebook and Spotify, and hold them accountable so that they, because Spotify made changes because of that. It made changes to its terms and conditions. Now we're on Spotify and you have to read the terms before you post a podcast. So it almost falls that responsibility for the bigger brands to go and ask for changes in with those behemoths. It falls on them. And then I don't know if that just helps my moral compass to feel better about it, but it's so hard for when you've got a small budget or you are a smaller brand to step away from the places that do work for getting your messages out to your audience.
Yeah, I do think it's a great question, and I agree with your you know your opinion on it. I do think we should push for change across everything. I think we should always be asking these institutions to develop and push forward based on, you know, our rights and what's right and wrong, you know, in the world and on the internet. I think it's always interesting when brands and celebrities do, you know, take a stance like this, because they've ultimately, they've got to where they are because of a combination of things, and whether that's a great product and, you know, a strong advertising message, they've spent a lot of money on ads, they've then got to a certain point and then they've, you know, took a stance because they're of a certain size, so they can do that. So they've almost, they've used Facebook and Instagram to advertise, generate revenue, get a certain size, and then they're using their position to push for change, which is great. But they're not doing that before they get to where they are. So I think you should always have a note on that. And just like earlier when I said about, you know, running your own race, I think it's irresponsible for you as a founder, if you've got overheads and if you've got salaries, to try to run the same race that Patagonia are doing. I think you should try and support them, you know, push Patagonia to push for change. But when it comes to your own race and your goals and what you're trying to do with your brand and the change that you're trying to make, there is a time and a place for compromise and sacrifices. And I think you've got to be smart about when you do those. So if you're not advertising for the first three quarters of the year, but then you're using Q4 to really take advantage and really reach a big audience, and you only advertise during Q4, that's a great way to do that. Or if you're only advertising on Instagram and not Facebook, and you know you're just trying to reach a certain audience on Instagram, that's, you know, that's one way of doing it. Or if you cut your ad spend in half, you know, that's a, you know, that's another way that you can, you know, make a change, but not compromise the success of your business and you know, the ability to reach your goals. Patagonia still post on Facebook and Instagram, so they're still supporting the platforms by being on there,
right?
And they're still posting, which means that their audiences are still on Facebook and Instagram, so their audiences are also consuming advertising and generating revenue for Facebook and Instagram. So it's not as clear cut as Patagonia have impacted these platforms. They're still using them to benefit themselves and their message. So yeah, I think a press release and, you know, the, you know, these big headlines about, you know, Patagonia coming off and these other brands, you know, they're abandoning Facebook, it can be quite complicated about what is actually happening and what you should do off the back of that. But I do agree that it's a moral dilemma. And I think it's important that, you know, everyone does some soul searching and really understands where they are personally and try not to focus on the press release. Yeah.
That tip of the iceberg and the tip of the mountain and all of it, isn't it? It's what you see is such a small piece of the puzzle, and there's so much else going on underneath the water.
For sure. So I mean, I did some digging on, you know, okay, so how much was Facebook supporting Patagonia's business, and I found a couple of articles that we can link to as, you know, as our source. But one article said that in I think it was 2019, Patagonia generated over $1 billion in revenue, and during the same time they spent around $6.2 million on Facebook ads.
Wow.
So it's not a large percentage of their revenue going onto Facebook ads.
Yeah.
And I, you know, so 6.2 million over the course of a year, what does that mean per day? That's $17,000 per day on Facebook ads. We quite easily manage brands that spend between $5,000 and $10,000 per day that aren't generating $1 billion.
Wow.
So then they're not, their media buyers aren't managing that much. Mm. You know, we've definitely come across accounts that have spent 20 to 30K a day on ads, and they're not Patagonia. So yeah, I would always take any message, any press release, any, you know, any outstanding headline with a pinch of salt and say, you know, what is the impact that this is going to have on Patagonia? And it's probably not that much of an impact, probably more of a benefit, because they are, people are talking about them. Yeah.
Mm. So interesting. I'm glad you found those stats, because I was reading some threads on LinkedIn about this, and somebody did mention, they said, you know, the percentage of what Patagonia spends on Facebook advertising compared to the rest of their media buying budget or the rest of their advertising budget is so small. It still blows my mind that they're spending $17,000 a day, and you manage brands that spend $20,000 a day. That still blows my mind. That's such a lot of money. But when you put it in those terms of, you know, the $1 billion turnover, I guess it's a tiny percentage. So we talked a bit about Facebook and Instagram, and you mentioned there, you know, using Instagram instead of Facebook. It's all part of the metaverse, isn't it? This metaverse that Mark Zuckerberg's rebranded as. But two questions here. What about other contenders? Like TikTok has been around for a long time, but we've really seen, like, podcasts have been around for a long time, but we've seen a real uptick in TikTok and podcasts over recent years. I don't know if it's because of what's been happening in the world for the last few years, but that's seems to have gone up. So is TikTok a viable channel for small businesses that want to move away from the metaverse? Or is it just a channel we should be using in general? And the second part of this question is, what do you think is going to be next?
Good leading question. I'll start with the first one because that's easier to answer. Yeah, TikTok is a lot like Instagram was sort of a few years ago, when organic reach was naturally a lot higher. Mm-hmm. TikTok, from an organic point of view, can be a really great way to get your message out there. And we work with brands that have had a very good return on organic content. So posting on TikTok organically and generating sales off the back of that, which is pretty mind blowing that you can still do that without having to, you know, pay to serve these ads to the bigger audiences. So yes, yeah. Get on TikTok, use the organic and the free part of TikTok to A/B test messaging, validate your product and your strategy, and then use the ad side of it to support that. Can we start with 5% of our ad spend going on TikTok? You know, in a couple of months' time, can we increase that to 15 to 30%? Mm-hmm. There's definitely positives and benefit, positives and negatives. The ad platform is younger than Facebook's. It's not as well developed, mm-hmm. Which is natural. The targeting isn't as well developed. But then the cost to advertise there is definitely cheaper. So you can reach more people for less. Mm-hmm. But the performance of that spend might, you know, be as good as Facebook's, even though you're so the opportunity is on TikTok. So get on there, but don't take your eye off the ball. If something is working on Facebook and Instagram, don't sacrifice that because of this new platform, this new shiny platform that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's next? I would be a rich man if I could predict that. Because I would buy shares in whatever that was going to be. I think whatever is next, I mean, there's obviously things around there, sort of like NFTs and metaverse, like you said, and there's weird and wonderful things that the brands are trying to push us into. A number of those will die and fall off. I think crypto and those sort of technologies will always be here. How they'll be used for content and marketing and brand awareness, I don't yet know. But ultimately, if what happens is a small portion of consumers will use these platforms and it'll grow from there, just like with TikTok. It started off with a very young audience and it's grown from there. So whatever is new will not start off as the next big thing. It will be underground for a while, and it probably, maybe it's already there. Yeah,
interesting. Remember the days of Vine? I miss Vine.
yeah.
So the final question for you today, thank you so much for your time. We've talked longer than I expected, but that always happens. We go off on tangents. But the final question for today is the question we ask all of the guests on this podcast, and that is, do you think there is such a thing as a truly sustainable business?
So I think there's definitely a good question. I think there's definitely sort of like different levels to this. I mean, any sort of consumption and, you know, use of materials and energy will naturally reduce how sustainable a brand is. Even if that's, you know, coming from a sustainable source and it's, you know, hydro or solar, there's always been some sort of consumption involved in making what, you know, the solar panel or the, you know, the wind turbine or, mm-hmm. or anything like that. So there's, you know, there's headaches to be had there. And, you know, that's above my payroll, to be honest, to answer those questions. So yeah, I think, you know, there's definitely an argument to say no, and there's an argument to say, but we can do better than what we're currently doing. And like I said, run your own race and don't focus on, you know, starting at zero and getting to Everest. We've got to look at where we are right now and try to become less, you know, fossil fuel intensive and more sustainable, you know, 1% at a time. And if we can look back in a year's time and say, you know what, we've really moved the needle and we've gone from here to here, mm-hmm. then that's a win. So yeah, that is my politician answer to that question.
very diplomatic.
So, yeah, very. That's my diplomatic answer. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Bill. It's been a pleasure having you on today. I've loved talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 3 of Easy Being Green. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Phil. There were a few good pieces of advice in there, both for executing on paid social strategies, but also for life in general. I mentioned at the start of this episode that Phil is part of a team of paid media and conscious content marketing experts that have just launched an exciting new venture called the Green Growth Project. So what is the Green Growth Project? Well, I'm glad you asked, my friend. It is an education hub for founders, marketers, and team members of planet positive businesses to learn how to grow consciously, to be a sustainable business for themselves, for their customers, and for the planet. The Green Growth Project gives you the tools, education, and support you need to drive forward your business's triple bottom line through paid media and conscious content marketing. So if you want to connect with Phil and learn more about the Green Growth Project, head to greengrowthproject.com. That's www.greengrowthproject.com. Thanks for being here. If you liked this podcast, we would so appreciate your 5-star review, which helps people like you to find people like us. And if you want to get in touch with me, Charlie, your host and editor of Earth Collective, you can do that at WeAreEarthCo on all social media, on all social media channels. That's at WeAreEarthCo on all social media channels. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.